Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Leute, es wird unangenehm, denn ich muss euch einfach fragen, habt ihr euch eigentlich schon mal um eure Versicherung gekümmert? Hier ist übrigens Tara vom Podcast Tara sagt was und ich sage euch, es wird allerhöchste Zeit, Ordnung in euer Versicherungschaos zu bringen und dabei kann euch die App Clark helfen. Da arbeiten ganz viele Expertinnen, die das hauptberuflich machen, man glaubt es kaum. Und mit meinem Code TARA60, alles groß und zusammengeschrieben, könnt ihr euch sogar einen Shopping-Gutschein sichern, 60 Euro, bei zum Beispiel Amazon oder Douglas einlösbar, mit dem Code TARA60.
From the BBC World Service, this is The Documentary, the home of original storytelling. I'm Hannah Gelbart. I'm here to tell you about our podcast, What in the World, which helps you make sense of what's happening in your world. In this bonus episode, we're looking at Botswana's jumbo-sized problem with elephants. Generally, when we talk about elephants, we talk about how there aren't enough of them, that their numbers are going down and that conservationists are scrambling to try and save them. But in Botswana, that isn't really true. It's had a hugely successful conservation program and is now home to more than 130,000 elephants. That's about a third of the world's total population. Numbers there have been going up and it's led to trouble. The elephants in Botswana have been wrecking farmland. They've been smashing down trees, even killing people, as they move out of national parks and into closer contact with humans. One of the ways Botswana is trying to manage its elephant population is by allowing trophy hunting, issuing permits for hunters from abroad to come and shoot the elephants and take a piece of the animal back home with them. Now, this might make you feel a bit uncomfortable, and you're not alone. Germany, whose citizens bring back more hunting trophies than any other EU nation, recently looked into stricter limits on what should be allowed into the country. But the president of Botswana, Mokgweetsi Masisi, was furious about this. He said that the money raised from the trophy hunting industry is vital not only to elephant conservation efforts, but it's also a huge part of his country's economy. He even threatened to send 20,000 elephants to Germany so that Germans could experience for themselves what it's actually like living alongside these huge creatures. And, he said, he wasn't joking. So we're going to find out how serious Mr. Masisi really is as we take a closer look at Botswana's elephant issues. Joining us from Harare in Zimbabwe to help us with all this is the BBC's Shingai Nyoka. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. So what are some of the laws around trophy hunting in countries in Southern Africa?
Well, the Southern Africa region is largely unanimous in its support for trophy hunting. It's a highly regulated sport. And so typically wildlife authorities in the various countries will set a quota each year of how many elephant, rhino, buffalo or leopard can be hunted. So they're quite specific about the age and whether the animal is making any kind of significant contribution to the herd. And so prospective hunters will need to secure hunting licenses and permits with the government. They often need to be accompanied by a licensed, registered professional hunter. And often they are accompanied by the national parks official on the hunt. And so there are all sorts of rules about when the hunt can happen and the kind of minimum caliber that can be used. There have been allegations of corruption in issuing licenses, but on the whole, a lot of the trophy hunting is legal.
It sounds like it's all above board, unlike, say, poaching.
Absolutely. This is highly regulated and legal in Southern African countries. But there also is a large number of poaching, especially when it comes to animals like elephants and rhino. So, for example, in South Africa, where I think the hunting quota for rhino last year was about 10, 500 rhino were poached for their horns. There are two sides to this. On the one side, you have your regulated hunting, but then there's also a significant number of poaching.
When we're talking about the regulated trophy hunting, what parts of the animals get taken as trophies and where do they end up?
Well, in most cases, it is the head. as well as the skin. In a lot of cases, they end up overseas. Most of the trophy hunters, I think maybe because of the costs, tend to come from countries like the USA, which is a huge market for countries like Botswana, Zimbabwe, and South Africa.
Who are some of the people who go to Botswana for trophy hunting? Is it like a sport?
It's referred to as a sport, but a lot of the times it's a single hunter who will travel from the US, for example, to Botswana, spend days with a licensed professional hunter, staking out the animals, staking out an elephant or a lion or a leopard, or in South Africa, a rhino. And they describe it as the thrill of the chase, and it can take days for them to be able to identify an animal and to kill it. They look at it as a sport, but to a lot of people here, it might not be a sport, but it does pay the bills and it does help those communities that are impoverished.
How much money does it bring in to some of these countries?
Well, there are some rough estimates, but in the 23 African countries that allow trophy hunting, it's brought in about $200 million US a year. And so it's a huge industry. And I think that's why there's this defense that Southern Africa has, and why it's decided to resist the pressure in terms of wanting to maintain trophy hunting.
Some of that pressure is coming from animal rights groups.
Yes, it is. It's a very emotionally charged debate. There are a lot of concerns about whether there are alternatives to trophy hunting. By most accounts, it's incredibly cruel where these animals are hunted and shot. A lot of the times they're wounded and they wander around with their wounds before they're finally killed. And so there's an outcry about what the alternatives are, whether this is the only way that money can be made to conserve this wildlife.
We're going to come back to Shingai in a bit. She mentioned there that trophy hunting is big business and hunters are willing to pay top dollar to shoot the world's biggest land animal. So I wanted to see how much these hunting trips actually cost. And, you know, it wasn't that hard to find. So I am on a website that does hunting holidays, kind of like package holidays, but the idea is you can go and shoot big game. Now, the cost of these holidays is going to come as a bit of a shock. But first, if you're enjoying what you're hearing and would like to understand more, 5 days a week, Monday to Friday, search What in the World wherever you found this podcast.
Hallo, hier sind Julia und Chris vom Podcast Drinnies. Wir machen nicht nur einen Comedy-Podcast, sondern gehen auch leidenschaftlich gerne nicht zu Stoßzeiten in den Supermarkt. Ehrlich gesagt bleibe ich am liebsten ganz zu Hause und ziehe nur eine Hose an, wenn es klingelt. Wenn es euch auch so geht, dann ist HelloFresh genau das Richtige für euch. Der Kochbox-Lieferservice bringt euch frische, abwechslungsreiche Gerichte direkt vor die Haustür, die ihr im Handumdrehen selbst zubereiten könnt.
Und mit dem Code LECKER24 könnt ihr jetzt richtig sparen. In Deutschland bis zu 120 Euro, in Österreich bis zu 130 Euro und in der Schweiz bis zu 140 Franken. Also Code LECKER24 eingeben und sparen.
PS, der panierte Portobello-Pilz mit Sweet Chili Ketchup ist sehr gut.
Leute, es wird unangenehm, denn ich muss euch einfach fragen, habt ihr euch eigentlich schon mal um eure Versicherung gekümmert? Hier ist übrigens Tara vom Podcast Tara sagt was und ich sage euch, es wird allerhöchste Zeit, Ordnung in euer Versicherungschaos zu bringen und dabei kann euch die App Clark helfen. Da arbeiten ganz viele Expertinnen, die das hauptberuflich machen, man glaubt es kaum. Und mit meinem Code TARA60, alles groß und zusammengeschrieben, könnt ihr euch sogar einen Shopping-Gutschein sichern, 60 Euro, bei zum Beispiel Amazon oder Douglas einlösbar, mit dem Code TARA60.
From the BBC World Service, I'm Hannah Gelbart, and we're talking about Botswana's relationship with its elephant population. Right now, I'm on a website that offers trophy hunting packages in the country. So I literally just Googled big game hunting in Botswana, and this website came up. It was not hard to find at all. Let me describe it to you. So there's a kind of carousel of pictures of hunters posing next to the carcasses of the elephants they've shot. They're huge. This particular deal is called the Elephant Buddy Special. It's a 12-day trip. There's two hunters with two guests and a guide. And it says that the hunters get to kill one elephant each. They say they expect, in quotes, to harvest magnificent trophies from the area. The price for this trip is $100,000. It is clearly very lucrative. But while it's tempting to say that hunting elephants is just a way to make money, there are reasons why Botswana is looking to control the population of the animals as well. Let's go back to Shingai.
Well, many would consider Botswana to be a victim of its own success. And there has been an increase in the elephant population there. It's the largest number of jumbos in the world. The majority of them are in the Chobe National Park, which is in the eastern part of the country, in the border with Zimbabwe. And I have been there and I've seen for myself that they are truly magnificent animals, but they also have a huge environmental impact. They knock down trees. But I think what a lot of people are saying is that, you know, even though there has been a huge investment in terms of conservation, raising awareness to the various communities about the importance of these animals, a lot of people attribute this population stability to hunting and the amount of money that this has brought in to the various communities. And so now, while they are angry at the overpopulation, at the kind of damage that the elephants do to their crops and to their persons, their, you know, dozens of people are killed by elephants every year, they're angry. But what they say is that now they see the value in the elephants, and so they'd rather conserve them.
Is hunting the only way to deal with overpopulation?
Well, there was a suggestion by Botswana's president, as you mentioned, that perhaps exporting these elephants to Germany would solve the problem, 20,000 of them. But what Botswana has tried to do is try to offer some of the neighboring countries like Angola, which has an underpopulation. But I think the major problem is the expense. It's incredibly expensive to translocate animals of that size. And also, elephants are intelligent species, and so they tend to gravitate towards areas where they are safe. And countries like Zambia has seen a decline in elephant populations because of poaching, and that has happened in Angola as well. And so even though they are moved into those areas, they invariably move back to countries like Zimbabwe, northern Zimbabwe, and to Botswana, where they find safety.
When Botswana's president said that he wanted to send 20,000 elephants to Germany, he's also said that he wanted to send 10,000 elephants to Hyde Park here in London to give people in other countries, he said, a taste of living alongside them. Do you think he was being serious?
He probably wasn't being serious, but we've, you know, these are some of the arguments that we've heard from people on the ground. I've traveled up to Hwange National Park and spoken to chiefs where members of their community have been killed, where crops have been destroyed. I've met one man who has had two attacks. First, he was attacked by lions, and then he was attacked by elephants. And he said that, you know, he loves the wildlife, but he made as much noise as he could, but that didn't stop the elephants from charging him and goring his thigh. But a tree saved him. And so there's a lot of trauma in many of the stories that we hear about just how people who have survived these animal attacks, it really is frightening. And there is a lot of resentment about how elephants are valued and how the opinions of locals are not. And I think that's the argument that he was trying to drive at, is that the international community has a lot of solutions, a lot of arguments they want to make about ending trophy hunting, but they're not really listening to what people on the ground are saying about how they think the elephant populations should be managed.
It does look like Germany probably won't be getting a shipment of 20,000 elephants anytime soon. Imagine getting them through customs. But conservation charities in Botswana have been looking at other ways of trying to keep the animals safe and separate from people. The BBC's John Murphy recently travelled to the country to try and find out what some of those methods are. He sent us this voice note.
As the saying goes, elephants never forget. And that's quite important to remember, because these huge animals, which need a lot of space and a lot of food and water to survive, roam around very large areas. I mean, an elephant could travel maybe 50 kilometres a day. There are these things called elephant corridors, which link up these areas. And these are sort of natural routes that the elephants have remembered, and they even pass on that knowledge to their children so that the next generation could travel along the same routes or recognize them. And so in certain areas, charities working there have sort of marked out where these natural corridors are, trying to show the people who live there, this is where elephants pass. So be slightly careful when you're in that area. But the trouble is that many of these corridors go close to human settlements, human villages. And some of these villages have been growing and the human population has been growing. So therefore, humans, people, and elephants are getting closer and closer together. In this particular area in northern Botswana, one person a year is killed by elephants. But in fact, about 25 elephants are killed by people, usually because farmers shoot them, and they're allowed to do that if they've gone into their fields. And one way farmers can protect their fields is to have fencing, but that's very expensive, or they can have what are called chili fences. They put chili along wires around their territory. Elephants don't like chilies. Sometimes they hang plastic bottles and things that make noises so that if the fence gets hit by an elephant, it makes a noise and puts them off. They've even started to introduce what are called beehive fences. So beehives are hanging from the fences, and if the elephant knocks it, it might disturb the bees and they come buzzing out, and the elephants really don't like bees. It's not perfect, but it is helping. And also the local people do realize that these elephants are really good for bringing in money to the area because tourists love to come and see them.
There are some pretty innovative techniques there. Let's go back to Shingai now. She told me that whatever the solution to Botswana's elephant problem is, it has to be mindful of the experience of the people who are actually living alongside them.
Communities themselves need to have a seat at the table to discuss how they think that these elephant populations should manage, because they are the ones that live with these animals. In Botswana, in Chobe, for example, where the elephant population has grown, and in many ways it outnumbers the number of local people there, elephants are starting to move into the suburbs, into people's backyards, in search of food. And so people really want the international community to understand what it is to live next to these animals and the kind of impact and devastation that animals, as wonderful and magnificent as they are, the kind of damage that they wreak on ordinary people.
Shingai, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Thank you.
That is it for this episode. If you've enjoyed this bonus edition of What in the World, then check out some of our others. We have covered things like the secrets of the underwater cables that carry your internet and the unstoppable rise of the Chinese shopping website Temu. You can find those wherever you get your BBC podcasts. I'm Hannah Gelbart, and I'll see you next time. Bye.